Hello and welcome to the second edition of The Racing Riot. I'm joined by my co-host Charlie. Charlie, how are you doing?
I'm good, Josh. Yeah, I mean, I thought the first show went well, really enjoyed it. And I actually love the fact on social media someone described us as twins, which I thought was brilliant. You know, you're probably not even old enough to drink and you're about 7 foot tall. So the similarities are endless.
Just to clear everything up, I am over the age to have a punt and to drink. Just to clear everything up, because I had a few people on Twitter saying I was six, I was nine, but I can clarify I'm 19 years of age, so I am old enough to do all of that. But coming up today on the show, what a week of racing it's been up in the north. Both myself and Charlie will be looking back on our highlights from York. Ryan Moore silences critics with three winners at York. We're also going to touch on the amount of criticism he's been receiving this season. And we have a very, very, very special guest on the show. We'll be speaking to the jockey championship leader, Oshie Murphy, regarding the deeply, deeply sad news of Roaring Lion's passing, but we will be celebrating his illustrious career. We are also planning on talking to Oshie about the jockeys championship and looking in depth of sort of what his day-to-day routine is. But nevertheless, let's get into York, because what a week it was.
Phenomenal week. I mean, so many great performances. We had most of the highest rated horses in the world showing up, and by and large, they all turned up and performed fantastically well.
Yeah, so the big talking point on the Wednesday was, of course, the Judmont, sort of the biggest race of the week, really. Japan won it. Ryan Moore rides. He silenced a few critics, beat the heavily odds-on favourite, Crystal Ocean. What did you make of that?
Thought it was an admirable performance, you know, as in... Right, the biggest thing for me is how Ryan Moore speaks about Japan. Ryan Moore is a guy that doesn't give an awful lot away. He's normally downbeat rather than overplaying horses. And he keeps going on about what an incredibly gorgeous individual Japan is, the quality he feels when he's riding him. And being straight up, if it's good enough for Ryan Moore, it's good enough for me, you know? As in, I know some people said about Crystal Ocean being in front too long and whatever else. I don't buy into that. York is often a front runner's track. I think Matt Chapman said something to Sir Michael Stoud afterwards, and I think he dismissed him straight away. Crystal Ocean ran right up to form, and giving away the £7 three-year-old's allowance, he was just outpointed by Japan, who was a worthy winner on the day.
Yeah, I do agree. I do think the Doyler fell maybe into a tiny bit of a trap with Circus Maximus. with Circus Maximus. I did think the Aidan O'Brien tactics did play to Japan's strengths rather than limiting Crystal Ocean. What do you think?
But we see that time and again, don't we? Aidan O'Brien is a master with horses that maybe aren't the best at making plans, setting traps for the other rivals to get a group one. On this occasion, I'm not so sure that happened. You know, Crystal Ocean, he's a strong stayer. He's back down at a mile and a quarter in the Judmont. How else are you going to ride him, Josh? You've got to go forward, surely. You've got to make it a test. Try and draw out his stamina. If we're looking in behind, possibly Alakhan was a bit unlucky. No luck in running on this day. But you also make your own luck at times, and possibly if he'd have been good enough, he'd have been able to get out when he wanted. Another one maybe for the notebook was... King of Comedy, who was awfully keen again and looks to me like he's very much unfurnished mentally, maybe as much as physically. And if he could just learn to race with a bit better timing and relax a little more, I wouldn't be surprised to see him make up into a really very, very top class 4-year-old.
Do you think he's a miler?
My immediate thought after the race was I wouldn't be surprised if they come down in trip, certainly in the short term. Get him to finish his races off, relax more and run through the line when possibly maybe they might go back up in trip. But yeah, for me watching, I thought it wouldn't be a surprise to see him back down to a mile in his next run.
Well, the day after was the Thursday, and we had the Queen out, Enable, all hail the Queen. And obviously she won in the way that Queens win. It was fairly comfortable. Talking about Japan's now 5-1 for the Arc. Enable's very short favourite. What are you thinking going into that race? Do you think Japan could?
Could Japan? Of course he could. Will he? I'd say most likely not. I think Enable is a superstar. 10th Group 1. you know, we didn't learn anything at York, did we? She beat Magical, who she's beaten in the Eclipse, and there was nothing new to be gained from it all, other than the British fans probably seeing her for the last time on home soil. And she didn't let us down, did she? The only other thing that goes against my positivity for the arc is she's going for a hat-trick of arcs. It's never been done before. The mighty Trev had a go and finished fourth when going for the hat-trick, and that's the only thing that puts me off, is history says it's tough. But I think if anyone's going to do it, Enable's probably the one.
I was watching it in the office, and there was a moment where she looked like she Magical was getting there, but then she's just got that extra gear, and she always makes it look almost effortless.
From a jockey's point of view, she looks a dream, because she does all the things as a jockey you love to do. You know, she's tactically versatile. She can take a lead. She can make the running. She has great timing. She never really seems to be pulling too hard or racing lazily. She just, as Frankie would want her at every moment of the time, she has a bit of a turn of foot, but she's also able to grind it out when needs be, as we saw in the King George. She looks, to me, from the outside looking in, as the complete racehorse. And to have carried on carrying all before her for these last few seasons, I really, really hope she wins her third arc and goes into the record books as a supreme champion.
Yeah, well, I, for one, am absolutely, I can't wait for the arc. I think it's going to be a great race. She's sort of coming towards her end of her career. I think this is probably the last season that she's going to be probably in training. But a horse that ran on Thursday that's just sort of starting their career and looks, the future looks very bright, was Mum's Tipple. Again, a Ryan Moore win. What did you make of 11 lengths? It was ridiculous.
I mean, what on the face of it is, I mean, and let's not get carried away. This was a sales race, you know, as in it wasn't a listed or group race. But the scintillating viewing of the performance was unbelievable. You don't see horses win by 11 lengths, especially at York, especially over that sort of trip. And the second horse of Carl Burke's was rated 97. So I think now Mum's Tipple's got an official rating of 116. That's getting close to being champion juvenile or up there, certainly to be a contender in these big back-end group ones. And that's where he's going to have to go now and step up again into pattern level. But visually, the time was good, especially, I think it was 0.38 seconds faster than standard. And he was unextended as well. So, you know, it wasn't like he had anything driving him on to go even quicker.
The sky is the limit, but I'm in love with Pinatubo.
Yeah.
Absolutely in love. So if they can meet this season, that's going to be a mouth-watering clash. But a future date that they could meet is the Guineas. Mum's Tipple's been inserted as 12-1. Obviously, Pinatubo's 3-1 favourite. That's going to be some clash. It's looking like a really good crop of two-year-olds.
It is looking like a good crop of two-year-olds. It's an exciting time of year. What you hope now is they all get to the end of their juvenile season where their reputation's intact. They stay fit, sound, and healthy through the winter, and they get luck through the spring that they all are able to turn up in peak condition at Newmarket first weekend in May, and we can see who's the best.
Mum's Tipple was obviously so, so quick, but on Friday, we saw the King of Speed. Well, now we know him as the King of Speed, Batash. He absolutely bolted up. Group one sprints are not meant to be won like that.
They're not. And I love Batash because he's all speed and it's great. And he always has that slight vulnerability about him, as in you don't know if he's going to boil over or whatever else. Though, he has looked a lot better this year. I think by all accounts he had a wind operation in the winter. Now, whether that's making him more relaxed, but he does seem like it's making life easier for Jim Crowley. And he won brilliantly at York, but he did beat Soldier's Call and So Perfect. And for me, the main form rival, 10 Sovereigns, didn't look like a 5-furlong horse to me. He looked like the drop back and trip. He was all at sea from an early stage. He looked like a horse that wasn't getting any traction. He looked like he was wheel spinning. And he probably did well to finish as close as he did. Batash needs to go and rout them in the Abbey for me to really jump up and down about it.
I love him. I absolutely love him. He's a horse that, as a racing fan, I am nervous, I'm excited, and that's before the race. He's just one of those horses that sort of captures the imagination, and you don't know what's going to happen because he sweated out quite badly. And obviously he had history at York. He's been there twice before, hadn't won either time. An atrocious record around there, but it was third time lucky, and he broke the track record. How can you not be impressed?
He beat Deja's track record, which I agree. On the clock, it was an exceptional performance, but I just think on a form line, I just don't know personally. I mean, he reminds me a bit of a horse called Lock Song back in the day, a mare that you were never quite sure whether they were going to cope with the preliminaries and whatever else. And when it comes together and they do, they have the capacity to be exceptional. And I'm not taking that away from Batash, but I'm not sure that he's beating exceptional horses, much as he looks great doing it. And like I say, I want to see him rout them in the Abbey as well.
Yeah, I do look forward to that too. Stradivarius, a horse that we all know very well. Second consecutive £1 million bonus. Won it by winning the Lonsdale Cup. It was, I thought it looked fairly convincing. I think he's the flat version of Alcyor, as in he only just does enough.
I completely agree. I mean, what I do know is I'd love to own Stradivarius, because it's almost like Weatherby's may as well write that check out for £1 million every year that he wants to turn up, because right now I'm not sure what's going to beat him. And you make an excellent point about him only just doing enough. And it's funny, he's been unbeaten since the start of the 2018 flat season. His rating in that time has only gone up £3 winning all these races, which is phenomenal slash ridiculous, which I think just adds weight to what you're saying. This season, he's won at York by a length and a quarter, Goodwood by a neck, Ascot by a length, and by three quarters of a length at York on his seasonal debut. And the last three times he's beat DXB, last year's Derby second. He's probably a handicapper's dream, because you know that he's going to run up to form every time he pitches up. And there's something tigerish about him that's incredibly admirable. There's been a lot of debate about whether he's a staying great or whatever else, but surely, Josh, when it comes down to it, you can only beat what's put in front of you.
Exactly. He does it. You can't knock a horse for winning. It doesn't matter how far he's beaten the horses. Ultimately, he's beaten the horses that are put in front of him. That's his task. And he goes, does it.
Completely agree. And I tell you what as well, it's probably why he lasts, because he is probably keeping a little bit back for himself, isn't he? He's toying with them and he's saying, look, I'm not going to go and absolutely blitz you like a Batash or something like that. I'm just going to stick my neck out enough just to give you a moment that you think you're going to beat me, but you're not going
to
beat me.
He's just humble. He's a humble horse. He likes to just win. He doesn't like to show off and make the other horses feel down. He's just nice, humble.
Is he humble or is he a big tease? Because he offers you that moment and then takes it away from you like that. It's gone. What would be very exciting is they keep talking that he could turn up in the Ark next year, as Enable won't be around anymore. And that would be a phenomenal swan song if that happened. And if he went and won the Ark, well, then it's a different story. He would be right up there, wouldn't he?
Do you think he's got the speed for that?
It's a good question. It's one, but I'm not going to disagree with John Gosden. He's saying it's a possibility at the moment.
That would be mouth-watering. That definitely would be mouth-watering. Ryan Moore had a great week. He had a great week. He had three winners, Japan, Mum's Tipple and Zaki. Ryan Moore has come under a lot of criticism. And I put a tweet out after Japan's win in the Jubmont. And I said that Ryan Moore needed that. And what I meant by that is this season, in some of the big races, he's come under a lot of criticism. Now, I'm not knocking Ryan Moore. I think a lot of it is unfair. What I meant by that is he needed that win. He needed that big race win, turning the favourite over with a brilliant ride. What did you make of Ryan Moore's York, and what did you make of Ryan Moore's season as a whole? Because it's been a big talking point throughout the whole of the season.
Well, I jumped on you straight away when you put that tweet out, because I'm a huge Ryan Moore fan and I thought you were criticising him, and we rowed about it on the train coming down today, and then you backtracked and said, actually, you're a big Ryan Moore fan and you didn't mean it. For me, I love the guy. You know, as a family, Josh and Jamie are great friends of mine, and I've looked up to Ryan because he probably started on his superstar career at a similar time to when I started in racing, and I just think he's the best. And I was looking through all these, you know, 2017, the bloke had 22 great Group 1 winners. 2018, he had eight Group 1 winners. So things were down a little bit last year. So far this year, He has won six Group Ones. We're only in August. He's won the Tattersalls Gold Cup, the Irish for the 1,000 Guineas, the St. James Palace, the July Cup, the Grand Prix de Paris, and the Judmont International. This is not a guy that's doing that badly. Do you think?
He is a brilliant, brilliant jockey, and he set his standards very, very high.
I mean, let's break it down. I think for me, and correct me if I'm wrong, the main rides that have been causes for criticism, Sir Dragonet in the Derby, people felt that he went too soon. I mean, Sir Dragonet got comfortably beat next time out, I think. He probably wasn't as good as people thought. The Derby itself possibly wasn't a great race. Aiden was mob-handed and ended up winning with Anthony van Dijk. I think the Coronation Cup, he drew some criticism about Defoe on Kew Gardens getting beat by Defoe, that again, he was in front too soon and got chinned. Maybe this actually breaks down to the fact that Aidan O'Brien is lacking real top, top class horses. Much he's winning Group 1s, don't get me wrong, but he's going mob-handed at these events a lot, which I know he's always done, but there's often a main contender. If you look through the Derby runners, it'd be difficult to say. They'd all won trials, but there wasn't one going miles above the rest as the absolute standout. And you also keep coming back to, like in the Guineas, Aidan supposedly chooses what Ryan rides. So if he's just a team player and he's ending up on the wrong ones, I don't think that's his fault. And as you've said rightly, the bar's raised that high and he is the one rider, maybe bar Frankie, that is often riding in all these top level races on horses with favourites chances all the time. So you're going to get beat, and because they're favourites, you're going to draw criticism. To me, I think people should back off, if I'm honest, because I think we're lucky to have Ryan Moore. I think he draws criticism because he's not this sort of extrovert character as well. So that invites more criticism from the media and the public alike. But let's enjoy him for what he is. A top-class jockey that wins hundreds of Group 1s for his career all over the world. Remember, this guy's won Melbourne Cups, Japan Cups, whatever else. He's Breeders' Cups. He's been everywhere and they love him everywhere. And I really hope people don't end up switching him off racing because of their negativity.
Well, some people have called for him to retire. Now, that is ridiculously extreme. I get very angry sometimes on Twitter. Sometimes I just have to put my phone away and not touch it because he does receive unfair criticism. Obviously, that's a bit contradicting with what I put the other day.
Mm.
But when people are telling him to retire, I think that's just ridiculous. Do you not think?
That's absolute nonsense. From the little I know of Ryan Moore, he dances very much to his own tune. So Ryan Moore will retire when he wants to retire. Now, whether that is next year, or whether it's in 20 years' time, I doubt it's because he's listening to anyone on Twitter venting their frustrations about the losing rides that he's had. And he'll stop when he's ready to stop. And like I say, let's enjoy him for as long as we have him.
I know. Another stat that I did want to point out is in the last five seasons, he's earned just over £31 million in prize money.
So what we can take from that is if he retires tomorrow, he's not going to be short of a few
million. Yeah, if he does choose to retire, I think he'll be fine. I don't think he's going to be struggling anytime soon. Ryan Moore obviously had a very good week at York, but another guy that had a good week at York, and he's actually our guest today, Oisin Murphy. He won the Lowther on Threat. Oisin, how are you doing?
Fine, thanks. How are you doing?
Yeah, not too bad. Just wondering, touching on Threat, how much do you rate her?
Yeah, so I'll be honest with you. Look, the form at Goodwood was very good behind Golden Horde, who went down to run a good race in the morning when just being pipped. And I was very hopeful. Richard Hannon has a very good string of horses, and particularly two-year-olds this year. And this is another one by Footsteps in the Sand, who I think is going to continue making progress.
Yep, she did look very, very impressive. On a sadder note, Oisin, this week, the decision was made to put down last year's top three-year-old Roaring Lion, which you obviously had such a good relationship with, after a battle with colic over in New Zealand. He meant so much to an awful lot of people, but what did he mean to you?
He was a game changer for me personally. I suppose any young jockey needs a star horse to put them on the big stage. And although I had been battle earlier in 2018 and throughout the year, Roaring Lion got more attention because it happened in Europe, and his big race success, I suppose, starting in the Dante, which I know was only a Group 2, but it captures the imagination at a time where everyone's looking for a really top middle distance horse. It's really unfortunate. He had two colic operations. they both went particularly well. Everyone was pleased, but he developed symptoms for a third time, and it was probably in the horse's best interest, and no doubt in the horse's best interest, and with his health in already a very poor state, it was the decision was taken to put him to sleep.
Oisin, Charlie here. I just wondered, mate, what was your absolute personal highlight on Roaring Lion? For me, the Judmont, I thought he was exceptional that day, but I wonder what for you was his absolute best moment.
Yeah, Charlie, that's interesting. I think certainly visually as a spectator and even being in the saddle that day, he really took off late on, and the way he travelled, it was at such ease and in such a deep race. Remember, he beat top class field that day. I think there was 6 Group 1 winners out of the 8 runners in the race, and that cemented his place. But on a personal level, of course, I come from Ireland, and I grew up watching the Irish Champion Stakes, and Kipco obviously sponsored now over the last few years to win kind of Sheikh Fahd's own race on my home turf, and just get up late to deny Saxon Warrior when the horse had to be incredibly brave, as things didn't really go right for me in the run. I knew it was going to be incredibly tactical, but it couldn't really have gone any worse, and he got me out of trouble, and it's a moment I'll never ever forget.
Sign of a great horse that, as well, when things don't go right and yet they still win. And Roaring Lion, you know, he is going to go down as a real, real top notcher. On a positive note, he has at least had one Northern Hemisphere covering season, hasn't he? And you must be pretty excited to hopefully throw your leg over some Roaring Lions in the future.
Yes, please God. Look, it's only actually when I realised that he passed away and people started printing the mares he covered. He had an incredible first season at Stud, and the credit must go to Tween Hills and the people who put faith in him by selling their mares. I think he covered at least 10 Group 1 winning mares or Group 1 winning producers, and there's not many stallions get a goal like that in their first year. So it's very exciting. Look, hopefully his legacy will live on. Dubai Millennium had similar fates, and he produced Dubowie, and look, I know that's unlikely to happen, but it is possible, and it keeps the dream alive for the next couple of years.
Definitely, Oisin. It's obviously a devastating news, and it's a huge loss for the sport. But on a positive note, with the Jockeys Championship this year, you're actually leading with 119 winners. Congratulations.
Thanks very much. Thanks, Josh. Today, you know, it's full steam ahead, and it has been since the beginning of the year for me. There's 2 months left, and Danny Tullip isn't going to stop riding winners, so I need to keep the pressure on. It's been my dream since I was a child, and fortunately, over the last few years, I've developed into a position, and I've got enough support to kind of give it a go. But I just like to keep going there to the end if I can.
It's funny, we talked about it last week when I said, you know, every jockey's dream when they come into the sport, I think, is to be champion, isn't it, first and foremost? And for you, if that happened, it'll be a huge box ticked off, I'd think.
Yeah, I agree. I suppose, first of all, my age, and also for the people that kind of have supported me since I was a child. Andrew Ball in particular, I was his apprentice. And look, Qatar Racing picked me up after my first year riding. So I know to Sheikh Fahd and Andrew, they'd be smiling as much as me come the 19th of October if I can lift that trophy.
Brilliant. I just wanted to ask a quick question, just slightly controversial. If you win it, and I think there's every chance you're going to, do you feel that the championship has been devalued by having the shortened season from the Guineas to the Champions Day, and also by some of the top guys, Ryan and Frankie, sort of shunning away from it anymore for the time being?
Yeah, that's a very interesting one, and I think that holds a lot of weight. I would have been champion last year if it was done in the old system, and if it was done annually, I'd also have been champion, but I didn't feel I deserved to be champion. I felt Sylvester had ridden more winners, and probably not better winners, but he took more rides and he'd ridden more winners than me in that championship period, from Guineas weekend to Champions Day, and I'm happy with the new system. I feel the predominantly the most important races are run in that period, and there's no reason why, you know, I feel strongly that the British jockeys are of the highest standard in the world, and if you are lucky enough to be in the top 10 or 20 and you do get invited to ride in Hong Kong, Japan and Dubai and Australia or wherever else, there's no reason why you shouldn't go. And look, I think the all-weather championship and the whole idea of it is fantastic, but they're not the top horses. The top horses don't run in Britain in the winter. So that's my take on it.
That's a great response. And to be honest, I think we have seen with the, you know, Ryan and Frankie and those guys staying away from it, it actually has provided a platform for guys to really launch themselves into the limelight. You know, Paul Hannigan before, who's a great friend of mine, and Jim Crowley and even Sylvester have become champion and then landed huge retainers with big owners from that. So I think there is a definite plus side to that, that it can actually launch guys into the big time as well.
And be honest, I probably should have touched on that as well, Terry. That's a very fair point. Jim Crowley got the Hamdan job. Sylvester has got the King Power job. It certainly gives you more chances. Look, Ryan and Frankie probably don't have the ambition of being champion anymore because they've been there and done it. And maybe, in 10 years' time, somebody else will feel that way. But I'm 23, so it's very important to me.
Great. That's brilliant.
Yeah, just wondering, the last thing touching on that, obviously it's been a big season so far. You've had 119 winners. Which one of those winners, can you pinpoint one of those winners that's meant the most to you or that you've enjoyed the most?
I suppose Voracious, like winning on Deirdre Goodwood was massive because it's for the Japanese and I worked so hard for that. But every young English flat jockey dreams about riding winners for Sir Michael Stout, and to do it in Cheveley Park colours and on a filly who I know isn't the most straightforward. He gave me an open book. It was my idea to kind of race away from the others, and I got a lot of credit from that, from Sir Michael and the owners, and also in the media. But on a personal level, I got a huge thrill.
One of the big parts of the show that we're going to be talking about today is the routine of a jockey and the pressure that can bring. I don't suppose you could run us through sort of your regular routine just so our listeners have more of an idea.
Yeah, so my routine is very fixed on where I'm racing that day, what day of the week it is, and also kind of what big races are coming up. So firstly, it's rare I ride out on a Monday. If I'm riding in Newmarket any day, I'll often pop into John Gosling, Sybin's, Ruhrs and Simcox or William Haggis's. I'll do three or four stables that day, or maybe even a smaller type of yard, but who operate at a very high level, Ed Vaughan. So that's how I kind of spend my time. I try to get into Andrew Boulding's once a week. I have a full-time driver called Sue McInulty. She takes me everywhere. So I try and get a little bit of sleep in the car, but there's no way I could operate at the workload I'm doing and drive and ride out at the moment. That just wouldn't be possible. So I'm fortunate that kind of the trainers I ride for don't expect me in every morning. And secondly, that I have such a good network of people around me to basically all I have to worry about is riding the horses.
Oisin, I've heard from a few people, which I find fascinating. Do you employ a guy to run through form and stuff with you as well now?
Yeah, so I have a form man called Terry Norman. He does every race from class four and above, and he will basically do a pace angle, a short summary on kind of the other horses in the race, and then synopsis on the horse I ride as well. So I've actually done that for 4 years.
Really?
I started employing him when I couldn't really afford to, but it's been very worthwhile. He got me on my first Group 1 winner Acclaim for Martin Mead, and thankfully we work well together.
Yeah. And does he work well with your agent, or do they stay completely separate?
So, they don't speak. If Terry has something to say, then it'll come through me. You know, because I speak to both of them a couple of times a day. Yeah.
Obviously, just working away from that, I mean, you're in a great position due to your success and how well you're riding. I mean, for the lads that aren't so fortunate, the hard yards, driving, early mornings, evening racing at the moment, flying around, it's tough, isn't it? People don't understand how tough it is for those sort of guys.
Yeah, I mean, just for all the listeners, the top 10 or 20 jockeys have, a pretty enjoyable lifestyle. You ride winners regularly. You get to ride nice horses and you earn a decent living. But for the apprentices and all the guys underneath, they're really grafting. They probably start at 6 o'clock every morning, work away riding out until 10, then go racing for one or two rides, drive a couple of hours, come home, sweat. You know, it's relentless, and you may have to do that for a couple of years before you ever get to ride a nice horse. I was one of the lucky ones. I was apprenticed to Andrew Balding, and I was only there a year before, or 6 months before I was handed my license, and he threw so many chances at me, and he does to all the apprentices in that yard. But you must think about all the other people riding. It's not as straightforward.
The other one that always amazes me is like when you see the guys, like from my point of view, riding, there's a jump jockey in the sweat and I had to do now and again, like the Adam Kirby's of this world that happen to take off probably, I'd imagine, 4 every morning, going and riding out, probably riding in the evening, not being able to have eat much through the day, and then doing the same thing day in, day out. The discipline is immense, in my opinion.
Yeah, Adam Kirby is actually a great example. I tell you, a bad day for him would be taken off probably 7, and a good day might be taken off 4 or 5. I'm sure he, I don't know exactly what weight he wakes up, but I know when he does 9 stone, he puts in an awful lot of effort, and he's a very, very good rider. And George Baker, I know he's retired now, but he used to do similar. Now, those two guys are in privileged positions, and Danny Tullip actually fits into that bracket as well. He's tall and sweats hard, but they all got to ride Group 1 winners and, you know, very high-class horses, and there's lads who are similarly tall and probably don't get the same chances. But for everyone listening in, that's a great example.
Just to finish, Oisin, you see, what I thought we should do before we do the next podcast is, Josh here thinks it's easy, you know, as in he's young and, you know, so what I'm going to do is I'm going to challenge Josh for the 3 days before we record the next podcast to live a bit of a Spartan lifestyle, spend half an hour in the bath every morning with limited amounts to eat through the day. And I want him to come on when we record the next podcast and tell the listeners how he feels. What do you think?
I'd be 100% up for that. And I'd just like to set out some ground rules.
Get out
of bed at 6, half a glass of water, quick little jog so you open your pores like 20 minutes, then get in the back for as long as you can, take a little 5-minute break. So maybe do 40 minutes, 5 minutes, and then 15 minutes. You can do an hour in total. And you'll feel dizzy if you do it properly, particularly your first few times when you get out. It'll take you about 20 minutes to recover enough energy to get dressed. Get dressed, go to work, and drink water, and limit yourself, we'd say, so no breakfast, then a little bit of fruit at lunchtime. And then when you get home in the evening, small bit of veg or tiny bit of fish, and then vice versa, tiny bit of chicken, small bit of veg, no carbohydrates. And I promise you, in 3 days, I reckon you'll lose 7 or 8 pounds. You'll feel terrible, and your moods will be horrific.
That doesn't sound good, but I am going to, I am going on holiday the following week. So you never know, it might be good for the holiday diet. But
I'm not joking, Josh. If you do that for 3 days, all your clothes will be too big for you.
Well, there we go. I've got a huge appetite. So do you think that would be the most difficult thing for me?
Well, after you've sweated really hard, you won't have any appetite again till lunchtime. And if you're completely dehydrated for 3 days, you know, like continue to dehydrate yourself, you won't be hungry, you'll just be thirsty.
Do you actually the best think... is when you get the cramps in your hands and your feet at night. You'll love
your
that.
Hips.
That's a real special
I'm
moment.
Not actually looking forward to filming the next podcast. I think I've got a feeling the quality is going to drop massively.
I think the entertainment for our listeners will go up hugely though.
I will definitely do that. And you can follow all the progress over on social media. I'll try and do as much as I possibly can. But thank you very much, Oisin. It's been a pleasure talking to you. Best of luck with the championship. Best of luck with the end of the season. And we hope to see you on the big stage winning again.
Cheers, gents. God bless.
That is all we've got time for on the show. We really, really do hope you enjoyed listening to The Racing Riot. This is episode 2. Make sure to go and follow us on social media. Follow at Racing Riot on Twitter so you can keep up to date with all the new stuff. Get involved, get tweeting, get commenting, and we look forward to hearing what you've got to say. Thank you very much, Charlie. It's been a pleasure.
Brilliant, mate. Can't wait for the next one.
You've actually got a big day coming up. Do you want to let the listeners know?
Well, I am getting married on September the 14th, Josh, and I've actually asked if you will be a page boy.
You seemed a little bit downhearted when you said that. We don't want Francesco to hear.
No, I'm the happiest man in the world. I cannot wait to get to the day and live my married life happily ever after.
Yeah, that's it. Thank you very much for listening. We do hope you enjoyed it, and we'll see you in a fortnight. Goodbye.